I love that part. Thanks. I hope you feel that way when I'm done. Okay, the disclaimers. Wait, I have to remember all this. Okay, breathe. Okay. I want to thank Anthony for asking me. I'm really flattered by that. And Kanan for picking me up, and Rusty, who's my personal assistant, for buying me hair dye today, because I didn't want to have gray hair with you. And I'm not telling anybody my age, but probably you'll figure it out, and it's a little shocking, actually. Okay, did I remember everybody? Oh, and Missy for saving my life this morning when I was really fucked up. And I said a prayer that I wouldn't curse, and... And I'm originally from New York, and cursing is just the way of being emphatic. And I didn't even know that it was like a bad thing until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not convinced it is, but okay, I'm going to try to, you know. Anyway, okay, my lame little story. I was born a long time ago in New York City. And my parents were Holocaust survivors. And... my father was the hero of the family, and my father got my mother and three kids out of a ghetto concentration camp and swam 13 miles down the river. And if it sounds like an HBO special, it sounded like that to me too. But if you knew my father, you would have believed it. And he was a man of his word. He had enormous honor. So he was actually extraordinary. I didn't get any of that. But my parents, supposedly the story is I didn't even know they were in the Holocaust. I was fractured from a very early age and self-centered. You know, I'm like the kind of person, I don't like me, but I'm all I ever think about. I think my mother's, or there are people in my family that say that there were five kids, and some people say there were four, but they came out with three. So somewhere along the line, I learned about all this. And before I go into my little lame spiel about my life, I want to welcome anybody who's relatively new. It's hard to save your life when you hate yourself, and if you're new, you hate yourself. And I know, because I was new a lot. And it's tough to take a seat with all of this camaraderie and all this joy when you feel like you're going to die inside. And for those of you, we were in the car yesterday talking about this. For those of you that are sitting here tonight and are contemplating suicide, I have something to tell you. And I don't know why I'm talking about this today, but I'm talking about it. And if you're contemplating it, I just want you to know that you'd be killing the wrong person, because this is not... this is not who you're going to be if you stay sober. And if you stay sober, so I highly recommend that you don't commit suicide. And I highly recommend that you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I highly recommend, hopefully if you're new, that you came in and you came in with desperation. Because I think if you come in with desperation, you got a much better chance. Okay, there's my disclaimer for today. And I've been wanting to cry all day. I actually have been, because I had a really rough morning, and it doesn't matter how long you're sober. I have not arrived. I'm sober. I got my sobriety date October 5th, 1985, and I have not arrived. I need Alcoholics Anonymous as much as I needed it when I first came. You know, I've landed, but I have not arrived, and I will never arrive because I'm a drunk. And I was at a meeting in Seattle one time, and there was a guy in a wheelchair, and he was celebrating 26 years, and I'll never forget this. The things that I have heard in Alcoholics Anonymous have completely overwhelmed me. They've transformed me and changed my life. Simple things that people have said, I've gone from in a moment of wanting to die into a very same moment wanting to live because of what one individual has said at a particular meeting. And this guy was celebrating 26 years, and he said, I have the same disease today that I had when I was living under the bridge. I had the same disease today that I had when I was drinking. I had the same disease today at 26 years that I had at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years. I've changed, my disease hasn't. And that's my story. I have changed, but my disease has not. and it got me this morning, and then I talked to another drunk, and it eased it up. Anyway, so my little lame story about my family, I don't remember a lot of my childhood, and I didn't recognize how fractured I was as a person until I would see my friends that I knew from high school years later, and they would start talking to me, and they would say, "Remember Mrs. Jones down the street?" And I don't fucking remember Mrs. Jones because I was self-centered, and I don't remember anything. I just remember being consumed by awkwardness and fear and terror. And I functioned real well in like a small group of people, and where I felt safe. And one of the reasons I love Alcoholics Anonymous is I feel safe in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, so my family, I was raised like you would, you know, I don't blame them for my alcoholism. They were terrific people, but they were horrific parents. That's just the truth. They didn't have anything left. Once they went through the war and were devastated, my mom came from a family of nine kids, and two were left. My father came from a family of 13, and three were left. Everyone else was murdered. So they were completely, you know, overwhelmed and devastated and traumatized, and my mother was really, really depressed. And then when she was 44 years old after the war, and they were coming to America, and they didn't speak English, my mother got pregnant with me, and it was probably the last thing in the world that she needed, was another mouth to feed. And I did not feel unwanted. That's not what I felt growing up. I did not feel unwanted. I was raised like you would raise a dog, and that you love the dog. And you love the dog like this. You feed the dog, and you always take the dog to the vet. But the dog has to be a good dog. The good dog has to sit and obey. And as long as I would sit and obey, everything was fine. But I could not disobey. I could not show any emotion. I could not participate. It was just, you know, go to your room and keep quiet and get straight A's and shut up because we've been through the war. But I didn't know what they were talking about. And I have two sisters and an older brother, and I didn't spend any time with them because they're 17, 18, and 20 years older than I am. So I was a flower girl at my sister's wedding when I was like five. So I was raised as an only child. And I didn't know I was crazy. I didn't think I was crazy. I didn't, you know, I didn't seem crazy. I just felt very different always. And I think that it doesn't really matter if you're a goody-goody or a baddie-baddie in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care if you're like me, a people pleaser, where your survival depends on the approval of other people, and you'll sell your soul down the river for their approval. I don't think if you're like that, or if you're full of tattoos and you're doing time in the joint, it's the same fucking thing. It's the opposite ends of the same stick, and the stick is see me. See who I am. Notice me. I need someone to acknowledge my existence. And I didn't feel that my existence was acknowledged. And I didn't know this when I was growing up. So what I did is I became the ultimate everything. I wanted and needed, it wasn't even I wanted, I needed their attention. So I went to goody-goody school. So I became, you know, first woman student council president and varsity cheerleading captain and math club president and top 10 in the class and blah, 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 because I thought the more I would do, like a do machine, the more I would do, then eventually maybe they would pay attention to me. And I have these little notes in my office at home, and one of the little notes says, "They'll never change." I like that. I like to remember that. So my mother was had been an actress before the war, and she loved the arts. And we were poor, but I didn't feel poor. See, this is one of those things. I didn't know I was poor. I was too self-centered to realize it. I really was. I didn't get it. I didn't compare myself. I was so consumed with my own emotional content. I was so consumed with how I felt. I was so consumed with my own awkwardness. I was so consumed with me that I didn't see what you had. That's the plus side. Like when you get sober and you find out how self-centered and narcissistic you really are, there's like a plus side to it too. And the plus side is I didn't live in a comparative state. I didn't know that you were in a better car or had a better house. I was too self-centered. All I wanted in my life was to feel good, and I wanted everyone to be responsible for that, or anyone, or it really didn't matter. It didn't really matter. Whatever. I needed to be fixed. I just needed to be fixed, and I did, because I was broken. So I did need to be fixed. And alcohol and drugs fixed me. Fixed me good, too, for a long time. Anyway, so I'm in this home, and I'm going to school in New York City, and I get in with the wrong crowd. I mean, I don't know. This is a long time ago. My girlfriend's 11 years old. I'm in fifth grade, and she's shooting heroin. I don't know. That's, you know. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. I don't, you know. I'm dorky, too. Very dorky. So they pull me out. My parents pull me out, and they put me in upstate New York in this small school, you know, I don't know if it was mom and apple pie. I don't know anything. I just know that I was driven to get attention. And, you know, my parents loved me, but I didn't feel it. I know that they love me today, but I did not feel it. And I was consumed with hatred for them for many, 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 many years. And I've been to therapy because I'm nuts. So... And I've stayed in therapy because I love to talk about me. But anyway, that's not even the point. And I did not get relief from my relationship with my mother until I was in the therapist's office. I don't even know why I'm talking about this, because who knows? Until the therapist said to me one time, "Was your mother, when she was in the concentration camp, was she raped?" And I was in my 30s by that time. And I had never considered, not once, not one time when I was drinking or using, not once did I consider what had happened to them. I did not have the capacity to love. I did not develop the capacity to care about another human being till I was 7 years sober. I did not have the capacity when I got sober to go to the supermarket alone until I was 3 years sober. And I didn't go to the mall for 7 years, and I'm Jewish and we're supposed to shop. I could not go by myself. I did not come in the way a lot of, you know when they say grave emotional and mental disorders, I just raise my hand. I come from the grave mental and emotional disorders group. Grave mental and emotional disorders group. And not everybody does. Some people just have a drinking and using problem. I have a drinking and using and mental problem. And I have a psychiatric list the mile long. And it doesn't matter, because the longer I stay sober, the more I think it's acute alcoholism. The longer I stay sober, the more I realize it's acute alcoholism. Anyway, so my little measly, lame story is, so my mom, we're poor, except there's food, so I don't know, we're poor, and there's not enough money to buy me a piano, so she takes me to dance class, and I loved it, I excelled in it, and I loved dancing, and I became a professional dancer, blah, 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 and I loved dancing because it was fantasy, and I love fantasy. I love booze and drugs and men and fantasy, and booze, and drugs, and fantasy, and booze, and drugs. I had to sort of get, you know, at the end it sort of was just booze and drugs and fantasy, because there was really no room for anyone else in the picture. And I don't like sharing, and my drug of choice is more, so, you know, that's how we end up, you know. When I think about, I think back to the way it was, and I am... overwhelmed sometimes when I stand up here. I am the last person that I would have thought would have gotten sober. And I was the last person that a lot of people thought would get sober. So you never know. Anyway, so my mother took me to ballet class and I loved it and I wanted to be a dancer and la 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 la, and I excelled in school and la 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 la. And And I was really ugly, too. I had this huge nose, and it was sort of like hard to be popular and ugly, but I managed. And the way I did it was it's like the clowns in the class. I developed this over-exaggerated personality, perfect for speed, vodka, and show business. It's like the formula. You know, this big personality that would walk in the room and probably suck up all the air, especially when I was high. And I loved being high. Did I tell you that? Oh, I loved it. I loved not feeling. I can't stand to live in my own skin for a minute. This is not today, but when I first got sober, do you know how I know I'm a drunk and a junkie? I know that I'm a drunk and a junkie, not because of how much I drank, not because of the hospitals I landed in, not because of how much I used, not because the lengths I went to. That's not how I know. I know that I'm a drunk and a junkie by the way I feel sober. That's what tells me. I couldn't stand sobriety. I can't stand that feeling of awkwardness and self-loathing and despair and depression and completely consumed with negative feelings and I'm a piece of shit and I can't even hear what you're saying. You can't even get through to me because I'm so preoccupied with what's going on right up here. That's how I know I'm a drunk. Not because of how I drink. A lot of people drink a lot. They stop at some point. I sort of didn't do that part. But still, that's not how I know. I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to live. I didn't want to feel. I thought my feelings like lived by themselves. I didn't know that my feelings came from my thinking. I didn't know any of this. I thought that I was just one big ball of feeling and it felt horrible and I didn't understand the point of it and why bother. And my hold card was the suicide card. That was my hold card. Anyway, so I had this big nose and I was really ugly, but I still was runner up at the prom and la 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 la, and I had a nose job. And which was a really good idea. And I was really afraid. You know, I have to watch the time because one time I got up to speak and 35 minutes into it, I'm still in fourth grade. So I have to be a little bit, which wasn't that interesting. Mrs. Bailegard's class. Anyway, no, that was third grade. I'll think Mrs. Glick, that's who it was. I remember all my teachers in, because of the, I when looking back, I always thought, what didn't I remember? And what did I remember? And I remembered all the teachers when I went to school upstate, and none in New York City, none. I don't remember any of the classes, same year, same time. And I think it's because, I just realized this now, I think it's because I felt they cared about me. So I think that's the reason. Anyway, so I am now, so I get a scholarship to Delphi University as a dance major, blah, 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 blah. And I'm on the campus, and my parents drop me off, and this is really kind of all very boring. It's like sort of a boring story. It's not very dramatic, you know, nobody beat me, although I used to wish they did. I would try to taunt them to beat me, which they didn't do because they were nice people. I wanted some kind of attention, and I thought if they would just give me some kind of attention, even if it was negative, it was better than what I was getting, which was zip. So I go to school, and my parents drop me off, and I used to, you know, I learned English while they were learning English, so I did a lot of, I tried to do what I think are adult things to help them while they were, you know, while they were trying to do business, and my father was a really hard worker, and he held down three jobs, and he lived to be 91, and he still ran his own business, and he was an extraordinary man, and so I land on this campus, right? I land on the campus and they drop me off. They don't know what to do, so they just drop me off and leave me with my little suitcase, and I have no idea what to do or where to go because I have no skill level, because I've been in this school system and I only know like where to go in a small little area. I can't get out of me. And I go to school and I get this great roommate and I'm a dance major and I can't go to class and I become excruciatingly depressed and I don't know it's depression, I don't know what it is, but I'm not going to school but I'm still good at making friends, and the reason I'm good at making friends is I have to make friends because my survival depends on it. My survival depends on you liking me. I can't live if you don't like me. And so I do everything so you will like me. And I'm very good at it. I'm one of the best actresses you'll ever see. I convince you that I care, everyone. My parents, my family, the men, everyone, the teachers. I don't have the capacity to care, but I act like I do. I've been doing that all my life. I just act and you believe me, and if you're unfortunate enough to fall in love with me, you're going to get really burnt because I leave a trail of blood, because I use you up and spit you out. I use you, and then I don't need you anymore, and I step over you, and I keep on trucking, because that's who I am. That's who I really am. Those are the things that I've learned in sobriety about myself. And some of them are not pretty. They're not pretty at all. My sponsor used to say to me, Minnie, the truth will set you free, click. After a couple of years of that, I used to think, doesn't she fucking know anything else to say? The truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. I said, get a new script. But it's the truth. The truth will set you free. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll see a lot of people come in, and they're very image-oriented. They're very image. They have to look good. So I'm going to tell you something. You can save your ass or your face, but you can't save both of them. So I suggest to you that when you go to Alcoholics Anonymous, just be who you are. If you feel bad, say you feel bad. If you hate it, say you hate it. Take the risk and tell the truth and save your life instead of seeking the approval of the people sitting next to you. Because it's been my experience that if you don't, you'll die from this disease. And I bury a lot of people because I've been sober a long time, and I hate it. I hate that my girlfriend got her arm chopped off 4 months ago from shooting heroin. I hate it. I hate that she's been trying to get sober for 10 years. I hate it. I hate it. I hate that she puts her relationship with someone ahead of her sobriety and she doesn't know it's killing her. I hate it. And if you're looking for a sponsor, find one that cares more about your life than your feelings. Your friends can care about your feelings. Your sponsor's got to care about your life. Because there has to be somebody that tells you the truth. Somebody's got to tell you the truth or you'll die. And dying doesn't seem like a bad option, probably because you're young. Didn't seem like a bad option to me, so I'm assuming it didn't seem like a bad option to you. Anyway, so I go to school, and I feel uncomfortable, and I can't go to class, and la 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 la, so I start working at bars. And I didn't use when I was young. I didn't do any of that. I didn't have my first drink till I was 18 years old. And my first drink was vodka and orange juice. It was my first. It was middle. It was next to the last. It was the last. It was the last again. It was the last again. It was the last again. That was the drink. I don't like the way it tastes. I am a horrific drunk. I drink. I pass out. I throw up on your feet. I end up in places that I don't know. It's awful. So I learned the wonderful world of narcotics to combine the drinking with. Because if you take enough speed with drinking, then you could just drink and drink and drink and drink and drink way more than anybody else. And you could just talk and talk and talk and talk way more than anybody else. And you too can clean your VHS with a Q-tip for 3 days. So I don't know about you, that's what I did. Or you can go to the carpet. We can go to the carpet. I was in the bathroom once in one of the hotels in Vegas. I realized this. We locked the doors because everybody, something happened. The room moved. I don't know. Something got jacked up and everybody, you know, were snorting and it all went over the floor. And so it doesn't matter that it's on the bathroom floor. You close the door and you crawl on your hands and knees and you snort because that's what you do. That's, I don't know what you did, but that's what I did. And so I go to the school and I start working at this bar and I became a go-go girl. You guys don't even probably remember, don't even know what go-go girls are. It doesn't matter. It's whatever it is. Listen, it's shaking your tits. That's what it is. Now you call it different things. It goes from go-go dancer to this dancer to stripper, but it's basically the same thing. And you make money, and then you can, you know, and then you could supply your own habit, because I don't want to depend on anybody else, because my habit's growing really, really, really fast. And one night I was with my girlfriend, and I said to her, we can't get back in the dorm. I'm still trying to go to school. I don't know how. I don't remember any of the teachers. I don't remember any of that. And I said to her, she said, oh, don't worry. You know, don't. Just go down and stay with my father. He lives in the West Village in New York, and we were out on the island. He lives in the West Village. Go stay with him. I'll tell him you're coming. It'll be 3:30 in the morning. I'll stay. She was working at a different place. I'll stay in another place, and then in the morning I'll come and pick you up. And I said, okay. So at 3:30 in the morning, ding dong, and this man answers, tall, thin, looks like between Peter O'Toole and Rod McEwen. It's okay if you don't know who those people are either, if that's all right too. And tall, blonde, you know, sort of sophisticated. You know, here I am, I'm like a punk, right? And he answers the door, and I'm like stunned by him. I don't know why. And he was so kind, and he gave me two orange pills, and they were vitamins. Why do I remember that? I don't know why. That's what I remember. I can't remember blocks of my life, but I remember that he handed me two orange multiple vitamins. And and I was in love. And why is that? I don't understand. I've never understood why that was funny. Didn't that happen to you? Did you just like across the room and that was it? I'm busy. I don't have a lot of time to spend. I got drugs to take and deals to make and things to do and things to drink, and we got to speed up this thing. And I was in love and there were some problems. just a few. One problem was he was my girlfriend's father. It was just girlfriend's father. The other was he was gay. The other was he was in a long-term committed relationship with another man. Doesn't stop me. I am not stopped by anything. And the part that I forgot to tell you is I always get what I want. I don't know about you. I don't know how you landed here, but I get what I want. I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't get what I wanted. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because I got exactly what I wanted. So you sort of have to stop and think, what is it that she wanted? Because, well, I wanted him. And I started hanging out with him. We left school. We got an apartment with four girls. I started hanging out. We started running and gunning the clubs of New York. I started dealing drugs to all the gay clubs in New York with four guys on motorcycles, with packing weapons, with ripped guys. You know, I am terrified of everything. I can't go to the grocery store. I'm like afraid everybody's looking at me. But when I'm loaded, I am fearless. And I would rather be fearless than loved. Love doesn't fucking hold a candle to fearless. Fear stops me. I can't do anything. I can't say anything. I can't confront you. I can't speak the truth. I can't tell you what I need. I can't tell you what I want. I can't tell you what I think of you. I can't tell you shit. Because I'm scared. Love's nice. But fearless? Are you kidding me? I can do anything when I'm loaded. Anything. And I'm not afraid of Jack. Nothing. You give me that bottle of vodka and the methamphetamine and throw some cocaine somewhere in there, and I'm going to tell you, I'm not afraid to do or go or say anything. But you take any one of those things away, and I can't get out of the closet. So, you know, hands down, I want to use and drink. And I staged a suicide. And I didn't know much about pills then. That wasn't my drug of choice at the time. I didn't know about that. And I almost died. It was supposed to be staged for attention. And I nearly died. And the bottom line is I married him because I got what I wanted. And I'm going to tell you something. I was sober a long time. I was sober 1993. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I think... like 16, 17, or 18 years, and I'm speaking at this Camp Potosi, this camp out, and I'm up there, and all of a sudden, it occurs to me, this is like 17, 18 years sober, it occurs to me, I never could think, why did he marry me? Like, I couldn't, and then I realized, at 17 or 18 years sober, I was bait. I was young, I was hot when I was young, and he was getting older. And so I was bait for his boyfriends. And I didn't realize that it's until 17 or 18 years, because had I realized it 1 minute earlier, I might have had to blow my brains out. That's why. So when you take the steps and you think you've arrived, you've taken them to the best of your ability to that point. You'll be back. Oh, you'll come back. Because you'll remember. And you'll be able to live with it. You'll remember and you'll be able to live with it. Because 1 minute before that, I don't know if I could have lived with that information, but when it came out of my mouth, I was okay. My husband